T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Gracias, fanáticos. Thank you, fans. All-stars. Baez, Contreras, Lester, Abreu. With apologies to Lester and Abreu, I want to focus on Baez and Contreras getting voted in.
All right.
Bernstein and McKnight, 9-1, middays here in the score. Validation of swag. That's what this is. This is not Bryant and Rizzo.
No.
These are guys that cause friction around the league. Sometimes Baez caused friction in his own dugout a little bit. I mean, occasionally
sometimes.
Joe Maddon will have to say, hey, you know, run it out. This is guys who are, I don't know, this guy's celebrating so much or what he's doing. I don't like the way these guys play. Pick whatever team has had some issue with one of these guys, or whether it's an umpire that didn't quite understand that it granted him time, you're supposed to thank him and didn't say you're welcome sarcastically and all this stuff. It is a validation. This is the fans saying, we love watching these guys play. We love the way that they play. Whether or not it's the frosted tips on the hair or whether it's the Venezuelan arm sleeve that was since legislated out, I think it's terrific. I think it's the fact that by popularity, that it is, you know, oh, it's a popularity contest.
But of course,
that's cool. But the endorsement of the swaggy way that they play, I think, is great, and I think it's meaningful that those are the people that have garnered enough of a vote from this Cubs team.
It's weird too, you know, you look up and down the All-Star lineups, and whether it's a guy like Nick Markakis making it in, who is 34, I think, or Matt Kemp, who is also there's old guard on these All-Star teams. So to see, I mean, J.D. Martinez is an older player too, but good God, he's hitting everything he looks at, so why wouldn't he be in the All-Star game? He's just been fantastic. But you're right, there's a little bit of swag to it. There's going to be some highlight bias, right? I mean, if you're watching your highlight shows late at night, the national ones, you're going to see Cubs highlights. You're not likely to see, you know, even the Dodgers highlights, because Max Muncy didn't make the team. Even the Dodgers highlights, you're likely to see it's Max Muncy, and every anchor is going to be the, oh, Max Muncy, who's doing this? And it's another home run for a guy you've never heard of. And I guess
solid analysis last night by Jessica Mendoza, actually talking about exactly what Muncy is doing to change his swing. So I've just, by the way.
Oh, for sure.
It was very interesting about his eye level, where his legs are, how he's seeing the ball, how he's exploding into the ball. It was cool stuff.
There's endorsement of swag from the Contreras and Baez angle, for sure. I thought it was interesting, too, that although pitchers aren't voted on by fans, you've got Trevor Bauer on this list, who has had... Hey, but listen. If you want to talk about swag,
oh, I know.
If you want to, like, seriously, if there is positive swag, or let put it this way, if there's opposite charges of swag, I don't even want to say negative, right? The guy is him. He is unapologetically him. No one is going to stop Trevor Bauer from being Trevor Bauer. Even Jeff Passan sitting down for an hour and a half with Trevor Bauer to talk about God knows what, whatever, and somehow
he's interesting,
making him look like a likable human being.
Apparently his UCLA teammates hated him too.
Oh, not a big fan. Yeah, nobody really liked Trevor Bauer all that much apparently on that team, and he did a lot to engender people not liking him, because that's, I think, how he gets going, right?
That's it.
He picks himself up. But I like that we are headed closer and closer toward more individualistic baseball. You know, you look in the past, at least when I was, you know, teens, late teens, early 20s kind of thing, all I could do was look at Andrew McCutchen and think, how is that man not an international superstar? The guy checks all the boxes. He passes all the tests. He's good looking. He hits the ball out of the ballpark. He is the centerpiece of a ball club. He plays center field, for God's sake.
Incredibly personable. Loves fan interaction.
Everything. Yep. All that stuff. Whether it was misses on those type of guys, or even Evan Longoria to a certain degree, you know, he was the face of the new era cap thing, and in some of those advertisements and jumping out of helicopters, and then they just went away. It feels like baseball has missed on so many opportunities to make these players into international-type stars, make them into stars, not quite LeBron level, because nobody gets there except LeBron, but you see...
And even somebody like Mike Trout, who isn't appreciated for being as good as he is.
Might be the best ball player we've ever seen.
Correct.
And the fact that we have to keep saying might and couch this and like give you the... Oh, let's whiteboard Mike Trout for you a little bit. Let's just let you know how good he... The fact that we have to do that every time we get to the Mike Trout conversation just kind of lets you know that baseball might not be doing as much as it can for its all-stars. It's so-called and it's so-named all-stars.
The 219's not happy with me. That's BS, Dan. If Baez didn't have the June he did, all the swag in the world wouldn't have put him on the all-star team.
But he had the June.
He's always had the swag. He's just performing this year. That's the difference. Of course he's good enough to be on the all-star team. But my point is, it was different when Bryant and Rizzo were sort of the faces of this team. And we need to get into what the Cubs are doing right here, because this is not sustainable. And it's not necessarily good. The outcomes are great. They can't live like this.
Oh, the comeback stuff.
You can't live like this. You can't do this.
When
you've got to stop.
I don't think Brandon Morrow giving up a home run when he did is necessarily indicative of the guy wearing down. He had 10 days off. He had the back thing. But we talked about how short starts tax bullpens.
Yeah.
And it's not just the back end guys. It's the middle guys who don't get you to back end guys. You're right. This is something that as the trade deadline nears, these are areas. We talk to Len Casper once a week, and every single time he's talking about that bullpen and how he expects moves to be made there.
And Jed Hoyer's going to be on 10 o'clock Wednesday. Jed Hoyer's going to be on. I'm going to be out, but you'll have an opportunity to talk to him about it, because they know they can't live like this. But, yeah, I know that obviously Baez is performing brilliantly, and Contreras has been wonderful. Of course, that's sort of assumed here. But I just think it's notable. And a good point, too, by a texter who says notable also that these are Jim Hendry guys. That both of these guys,
that's right,
are Jim Hendry guys.
That's right.
But
Jim Hendry had kind of been convinced to take Javi Baez, but sure.
We've been so used to it being Brizzo that's been the face of the team in one way or another, has been the whatever combination of Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo. Well, Bryant has been hurt, and Rizzo's been and this is a little different face of the team. It's a little darker. It's a little more fun. It's a little more expressive. You know, Rizzo's had his moments, but these are super high energy, live on the edges kind of baseball players. And if this is what defines the 2018 Cubs, and if this is what people are voting for because they love it, that's great. I think it's great for baseball for those guys for right now to be the faces of the Cubs. I think it's just a win-win for everybody. Not saying that Bryant isn't the best player on the team when healthy. He is the best player on the team when healthy.
Or
that Anthony Rizzo, that it's his clubhouse.
Mm-hmm.
All true. But for the moment, for what they are doing, why not celebrate a little bit of flavor on this team that hasn't been out front before?
I think it's a decent way to look at it. I think especially as you get into a West Coast trip, it's going to be perhaps a little sleepy, at least for fans, with 9-15 starts. That, yeah, it's something to celebrate. But I think you bring up an interesting point. You know, this is not a move on from any of the tentpoles of your organization. I mean, Chris Bryant needs to return to be Chris Bryant. Anthony Rizzo needs to step up production in a lot of ways. He needs to be more consistent. He needs to be, frankly, just Anthony Rizzo, to be honest with you. Patrick Mooney of The Athletic has done a really good job kind of chronicling all the things that Joe Maddon and the guys have gotten over and still achieved. You know, whether that's really being without Chris Bryant or Anthony Rizzo for the better part of a month. I mean, really, when you look at it, the DL stint for Bryant hasn't been that long, but how long have you really had healthy Chris Bryant? It's a fair question to ask.
Sure.
I think the underperformance in Anthony Rizzo has gone on for a little while here, plus the injury he had to start the season. You have gotten over things. And by the way, Yu Darvish has thrown, 40 innings at the major league level? And they haven't all been good. That's for sure. So you've gotten by with all these things coming at you. And whether it's because of Javi Baez's performance or clutchitude, or whether it's Wilson and his ability, you've seen step-ups from a lot of different places.
He needs a rest, though.
Yeah, he probably needs a day.
Contreras needs, and they said it with Caratini coming up, that he's going to catch more. You can't put this on a catcher. I don't care how young and energetic and how many says, I can catch every day. You can't. Catching ruins your body.
It takes a lot to catch every day. It takes a lot. It'll drive guys to absolute edges of their abilities. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I've always gone, and remember, Wilson Contreras is a converted catcher too. I mean, when you mentioned the Jim Hendry picks, the last couple, I mean, Contreras changed spots, right, to get there from third, I think. So if I were running a club, and God help whatever club that ends up being, because it'll never happen, I would take every single one of my catchers with any kind of offensive ability and say, here's a first baseman's mitt. Mm-hmm. Enjoy your career.
That was the Joe Mauer argument
forever. So difficult. It's so difficult to maintain any kind of consistency.
Haven't they studied this?
And Buster Posey is a gift.
Haven't we talked to a couple of our guys about this? And maybe Sullivan tomorrow would be good to ask about that, about wear and tear on catchers, about when it starts to matter in a given season or at a certain age, because eventually they all become Jake Taylor.
Bad knees. Yeah. Not all of them. Not if you're Benito Santiago and filling up every 6 months with whatever he had to fill up with.
Hey, he was a Cub, but near the end too. One of my favorite guys to cover.
Really? Fun to talk to.
Oh,
Benito.
Benito was great because he was already kind of a made guy at that point.
Yeah.
He was cashing a check, and he knew everything about every hitter you could talk to and find him. I told you about the day they got rained out, and we were.
No, not hanging out with Benito.
Yeah,
no. I just remember him from his old Giants days and still throwing guys out from his knees when he's 45.
It was a long rain delay, and you forget these guys are just overgrown children. And then I went back through the clubhouse after they'd banged the game. I thought maybe grab a couple preview quotes for the next game, grab a little sound, you just file that, whatever.
Right.
And Benito Santiago is standing in front of his locker going, "We don't have to play today. No game for us. We can go home. We don't have to play. They banged the game." He was just freestyling. It was like a kid on a snow day at school running around the house when the call comes in, the robocall comes in that there's no school. I mean, he was like 38 or whatever he was, and he's dancing around because the game got called.
He was so this was 99 when he played with the Cubs.
Yeah.
Right? He was 34 years old.
He was only 34?
34 okay. years old and went on to play 511 more games. He had a stop with Cincinnati, 3 years with the Giants, which is where I remember him best, and then the Kansas City Royals, which I was for the second time. No, just the first time. And then he had like six games with the Pirates too in 2005. Benito Santiago played till he was 40 years old.
As a catcher?
Ostensibly, yes.
Wow. I thought Carlton Fisk was a thing.
Left field.
No, that was only in 86.
Yes, and whose decision was that?
Hawk.
Mm-hmm. Which, to Hawk's credit, he's kind of taken on. Yeah. It was my bad. He's literally said that was my fault.
And he moved the fences back. Oh,
was
my God.
Really? That was the same?
That year.
I didn't realize that was also his decision.
He moved, yes, and he explained it. There was no metrics involved. There were no spray charts involved. He said...
Metrics.
Hawk said, "We're going to move the fence back."
The metric system
He said, "Our thumpers can hit it out anywhere." He thought that a 10-foot difference, because based in his mind's eye... the trajectory of White Sox home runs would not be affected, but the trajectory of other teams' home runs would be. I'm not making this up.
I know.
It actually happened. He literally said that. Our thumpers can hit it out anywhere. This segment brought to you by KFC. This summer, get a KFC Extra Crispy $20 fill-up. The meal includes 8 pieces of extra crispy chicken plus all the fixins. This offer is not everywhere and not forever. Prices may vary. Tax and substitutions extra. Doug is in Plainfield, and he is on the score. What's happening, Doug?
Hey, Danny. Hey, Connor.
Hey.
I'm just bringing it up to the fact that I know we were talking about Baez and Contreras, but do you find it odd that Theo and Jed have been on, been everywhere pretty much, all over the news, and done quite a few interviews, but Almora has 6 less hits than Trout, and he was a write-in. I mean, why would you think that is? That he's not getting more, more press?
He wasn't on the ballot.
Yeah, he wasn't on the ballot to start.
Yeah, but
because of I think the way it works is teams essentially submit players who will be on All-Star ballots. They expect to get a lot of run, and he wasn't on the ballot because they didn't expect him to play as much as he has.
I guess I get that. I mean
it's roster squeeze, really.
Him being Theo's first pick, and man, I just found it really odd that he wasn't being talked about more, because maybe you're right, but with the article last week and everything that's been going on, I mean, in regards to, you know, the contract or whatever that we were talking about, you know, the playing time, but it just seemed a little odd to me.
But again, he wasn't on the ballot, so it's not really. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
fans
can't find Max Muncy on the ballot. Fans can't find. I mean, even those who are on the ballot and having kind of the breakout resurgent, Mitch Moreland, for example, although he's flagged some in the last month, like that's led for a little while. But Jose Abreu overtook him. I mean, this is it's a popularity thing.
And look, more guys are going to get into this game. There's going to be a bunch of names that beg off. There's going to be a bunch of injuries. You're going to have a whole slew of other names that end up making this All-Star team.
You know how you do this job? You do any one job long enough, and you lose just a little bit of something. You know, there's always something that kind of falls off to the wayside. Like, in order to maintain momentum on everything else, you kind of have to jettison a little bit of cargo on your way. All-Star snubs, man. I can't get worked up about him anymore. It doesn't because of the way this game works, that like specifically the All-Star game, there's going to be four or five guys who all drop out. Somebody's going to win the final vote, and then somebody else from that list is going to end up getting in because somebody asks out. There's going to be seven or eight. It's pitchers too. Like, how many people are going to pitch that last day before the All-Star break and just go, all right, I'm not going.
Can't make it.
And then reliever X, Y, and Z, like Brad Brock, is going to walk into the All-Star game because he doesn't know where he is. He's going to end up
Blake
there.
Snell will find his way to his
rightful
spot.
These guys, they're all going to be there. I understand players being upset that their teammates or that they weren't voted in. I understand why, especially players, stump for dudes, you know, because let's be honest, bonuses are in contracts and money is attached to these things. I'm not going to fault them for fighting for their guys. It's very difficult for me to get worked up about All-Star snubs.
It's like 20% of the league?
Yeah, six or seven of them are going in anyway.
I want to say it's like 20% of baseball makes the All-Star team.
The,
right?
The rosters are like 65 deep. I mean, you have to, ever since Bud Selig called the tie in 02, it's like, well, now we need 55 pitchers, so we can't ever have this again, because now it counts.
He's
not,
Connor
not
McKnight,
anymore, but it used to.
And I'm Dan Bernstein. Let's discuss a little more about what's actually happening with what the Cubs are doing, because I think we can get a little mesmerized by a 7-1 homestand and the outcomes and the improbabilities and the stories, and every time you check your phone, like, ooh, what happened? Oh, my gosh. Do they still call it a shrimp when you win on a walk? It's a walk-off walk. Is that still referred to as a shrimp?
I've, in all my life, never heard to it called a shrimp.
Is that because it's unsatisfying when you have it?
No, not if you have enough of it.
Not a big shrimp. Well, you got to have a lot of shrimp. That's true.
There was a Twitter handle that would send out, like, shrimp alert. Yes, look that up. I believe that a walk-off walk was at least at one point referred to as a shrimp, which is a great term.
It is a good term.
I didn't know if it's a verb, if you shrimp your way to victory, but confirm that. But yeah, and it's great.
Oh, we've got it.
Okay, good.
We've got stuff for you.
I believe it was at one point referred to as a shrimp victory, but you can't live like this. They're redlining so many different power systems.
Man cannot live on shrimp alone.
There you have it. So we'll discuss the way the Cubs are doing this and how it's got to get better. I don't mean to pee in the cornflakes here, but it's got to get better. You've got the score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This segment brought to you by Walgreens. Walgreens is here for all your diabetes needs. Stop by today to consult with your pharmacist and get trusted advice and tips about your diabetes medications and testing supplies. A shrimp, indeed it was.
Yeah, a deep dive in this apparently has unearthed a 2000, in October of 2013, in a Grantland article that I can only assume totaled 7,000 words. Jonah Carey, our guy, wrote this up. Shrimp alert, it's a baseball dictionary, essentially. Weird terms. Shrimp alert.
Glossary of some kind.
A notice to fans to be on guard since a team is approaching a potential walk-off walk. In the rare instance when a walk-off walk occurs, the traditional form of celebration is to watch a shrimp running on a treadmill with the theme to the Benny Hill Show playing in the background. I clicked the link and went to YouTube. YouTube unfortunately tells me that shrimp running on a treadmill, the video is no longer available due to a copyright claim by David Sholnick. So,
what? Is it animated, or is there an actual shrimp on an underwater treadmill?
There's no way for me to tell you. I don't No, if only I knew. But I don't, because David Cholnick and his attorneys have removed this video and Joy from YouTube. So apparently we can't find this out.
It's probably not the giant mantis shrimp, which is one of the most fearsome predators.
That's the one that shoots the water at people with the tail or something?
No, there's a couple different kinds of mantis shrimp. Because I was watching Planet Earth the other night, and there is...
That show, you can run with that show.
Oh,
like,
dude.
Like, any night, you're like, I don't know what to watch, or you're, like, paralyzed by Netflix choices, and you're just, like, reading descriptions of movies, and you're like, ah, that's not it, that's not it. Settle on a Planet Earth. Doesn't matter which one.
They're the giant mantis shrimp. When it starts shooting out of its burrow to grab fish and eat them,
yeah.
It's like Odell Beckham Jr. catches over and over again. And the other part is the male is doing this to feed a female. And what will happen is sometimes a male will go out and go looking for food and be enticed by a pheromone that has been sent out by another female mantis shrimp, who has been left by a male, and the male will just go to the new female in that burrow and be like, okay, I'm here to help.
All right.
And the problem is that they've evolved to want to mate with the larger female for the idea of having larger, more successful children, more offspring, bigger offspring, members
could just
of
the be
offspring.
The shrimp's preference.
Right.
Who knows?
But the fact is, then the penalty is when you find that larger mate, you have to get even more food. So apparently, some males leave like, come on already. Like, all I'm doing is catching food for you.
How big is the mantis shrimp?
I don't, it's hard
like
to tell.
Like a cubit? Is it? Is it like, what are we talking about?
I don't,
foot and a half?
They're big. The other one has got like a foot, the other mantis shrimp has got an explosive kicking foot that it uses to break open the shells of other mollusks and animals. It's a killer.
Most of those Planet Earth. Yep. Yes, absolutely.
So it's not that kind of shrimp.
You always get that, but you will. Some of them will keep you up at night, like the caves one with all the eyeless salamanders and all this. They're kind of creepy. Or the deep sea one with the anglerfish.
Oh, I love those.
Oh, they're scary though. They'll keep you up. So we know what a shrimp alert is now, but Jonah did not really tell us why a shrimp alert, so we'll have to ask him on Friday.
Okay.
Somebody remind me.
And there's some people disagreeing with me here saying that I don't share this concern, Dan. The Cubs are playing rather poorly, and they're still winning. I would assume they play better at some point, but look at the month of August. It is a giant bag of bums to slay.
Is it? I thought August was tough. I thought August had you a couple games against the, or am I thinking of September? Yeah, September when you've got six against the Brewers in the span of a week, and then you got to get the Diamondbacks, and then you've got the Pirates and Cardinals to end things. Boy, August is full of Padres, Royals, Nats, two with Milwaukee, Pirates, Tigers, Reds, who, by the way, going into the weekend, or going into another Red series, I guess, with all of that stacked up against you, you know what Len and JD did a really good job of doing is set up every single instant. That Reds offense will get you. They have been playing incredibly, hitting incredibly well the last 6 weeks or so. That is a dangerous thing. It's fun to watch. I mean, when it's not here, I guess.
No, that's why I asked the question of Jonah Carey on Friday. Have the Reds stopped being bad? And maybe at the very least they've stopped being bad because they've got difficult outs in their lineup. So we know who the bad teams are. Maybe they're just not one of them anymore. The Bulls made a big move over the weekend. We are going to talk about that. Their summer league team is in action. We are getting our very first look at the Bulls rookies, seeing some good, some in between, some meh. And
a lot of shots are getting up.
We will get
a lot of shots going up.
We'll get to the bottom of the Bulls' decision to match the Kings' offer to Zach LaVine. Our first conversation with Tribune Bulls and NBA reporter Malika Andrews next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Everything's fine. Give a guy $20 million a year.
It fixes some problems.
It tends to make people happier. Amazing how that works. And here to talk about the Bulls' decision and their summer league team is a reporter who is currently watching them play out in Las Vegas. Malika Andrews of the Chicago Tribune is on Twitter at Malika_Andrews and joins the Bernstein and McKnight show. Hi, Malika. How's Vegas?
Hey. It is hot. How is it back in Chicago?
Also warm.
Also hot. Yes.
Warm.
So before we get into the Levine stuff, early returns on this summer league group. What do you think?
Well, I think that Gar Pax can be very pleased with what they got in Wendell Carter Jr. I think that, you know, after the first couple of picks, there was kind of some questions on, okay, how are we going to fit another big next to Lowry? And I think that Wendell has proven to be one of the most complete players that is in the summer league. I think, you know, he's been excellent, especially on the defensive end. He had four blocks in the first quarter of his first summer league game, five in the game total, and he posted another four last night in a, you know, a poor performance. So I think that Chicago fans should be pretty pleased with that pick.
Some faith rewarded in Chandler Hutchison. I know summer league basketball is summer league basketball, but you can tell how a guy is looking or is shaped so far, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, his first game, he kind of did a little bit of everything, right? He was, you know, he scored. He was good on the defensive end. He kind of showed his shot range. Last night, he struggled a little bit. And Randy Brown kind of said, you know, we're still trying to figure out what his spots are on the floor and help open him up for that. But I think he's kind of starting to get his feet under him.
So when you see the Bulls make the decision that they made, we talked a little earlier in the show about agency, about what it says when the Bulls let another team do the negotiating for them. And do you think it's meaningful at all? Do you think, I don't know how far down the road they actually were in their negotiations, but what do you think is the significance of allowing another team to establish the parameters of the contract for somebody as important as Levine seems to be to them?
Well, I mean, I think that's the question, right? It was like, how important is this player? And ultimately, they decided that, you know, kind of whether you like the contract or not, he's now the financial centerpiece of this new team. So I think that it seems to be that that's what was needed in order to get the Bulls to take the leap that Levine wanted them to. But look, now he's on the team. Now it's about figuring out a way to make it so that him and Markkanen and Wendell, who seem to be like they will be in the picture no matter what, can kind of play together. And by next summer, it's kind of you're going to have a little bit of a better idea of how the roster is going to fit together and what needs they're going to have. Because last year, you know, they suffered a lot of injuries. They don't really, and Fred was talking about this yesterday, they don't really have a good idea exactly of what pieces they have and how they're going to fit together. So this year is going to be much more of an evaluation of, okay, what do we have? What do we need? And then by next summer, they'll kind of be in more of a position to go out and potentially get that missing piece.
So, Malika, it does seem, though, that because they've signed Levine to the deal that they did, that their options next summer, financially speaking, are more limited than they could have been. You've got space for one max deal, probably not two, maybe if you jump through some hoops. I guess the consensus or some of the thoughts has been you'd rather have Levine at 20 a year or so than striking out on big free agents next summer like you always do. I wonder if that's, if in your mind, that's kind of a fair assessment of the end of the day after a year from now.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think that they decided they couldn't, they when they looked around and they said, okay, you know, if we kind of have a little bit of a lack of talent, honestly, and the talent we do have is very young. And so they looked at Levine and they were like, all right, we can't let this guy walk. At the end of the day, whether you think he's worth $20 million a year or not, I tend to be in the camp of, okay, that might be a little bit steep, but now you got it. They decided that they needed that sort of veteran, even if he is a younger veteran, leadership. And so next summer, like you mentioned, there might only be space for one, but it seems like the most important position they need to evaluate and take a look at and potentially, depending on how the season goes, go out and get is a point guard. Levine is a score first, score second guard. Lowry needs to be set up. Wendell needs to be set up. And so you need a guard that can kind of run their offense. And the question becomes, is that too much of a responsibility for Chris Dunn? I don't know the answer to that. This season is kind of time will tell.
I liked what I saw during that stretch with Chris Dunn last year when it looked like he really wanted the ball at the ends of games. We know he can.
Absolutely.
We know he can guard. And I think some of the defensive analytics weren't quite as kind as the eye test when we were looking at that. So I'm in between on that. But I like what I see of him as a defensive player. So it sounds like you're not quite as sure. Is this you? Is it the? Do you think this is reflective of how the Bulls think? Because you're talking about a top five pick here. The answer better be yes on Dunn.
I mean, it's more to me. It's an unproven thing. I'm going to reserve judgment, especially on the offensive end. But the question is, does he have enough experience? It's not easy to run an offense like that. And so I think that he, you know, struggled with a little bit of injury last year. And so the biggest thing for them is they're going to have to come back healthy so that there is enough time to kind of evaluate that core together, because they just didn't get enough playing time together last year.
So where is Fred in all of this? I mean, because the Bulls front office has stated with their signing of Zach LaVine to the 20-year that this is their guy. This is part of the core. We have established the players. We have given you what we think you need. Do you think Fred believes, or not believes, but can work with what's been given to him? Do you think pressure is now applied elsewhere?
Well, yeah. I mean, I do think that it's kind of going to be a little bit, whether fair or not, a boom or bust year for him. I'm not sure he's not in the best position right now, because they are at least one piece short, right? And so it's going to be hard, whether they decide to kind of use this year to try to get another back in the lottery, or they're going to, you know, come in around whatever 32-ish wins, and then try to go out and get a big fish next summer. Whether or not Fred is around for that kind of time will tell, but I do think he has some of the pieces that he needs, not all of them. And it's kind of Pax and Gar have kind of come out and said, for now, you know, he's kind of our guy, but I think around Christmas that's going to start to, you know, potentially be reevaluated based on how the first half of the season goes. But I mean, Fred, he said he was very much involved in the decision to bring LaVine back, and it seems like, you know, for right now, this is his team.
Malika Andrews, our guest on Sports Radio 670 The Score. She covers the Bulls for the Chicago Tribune. Speaking of unfair, I've been on this for a while, and it's sort of the unintended consequence, or one of them, of the failed tank this year, is the grand overrating of Lauri Markkanen. I think he's really good, and I think all of us think he's really good. He was an all-rookie performer, but almost in a way of stepping into this vacuum of stardom, the team, whether it's Foreman, whether it's Paxson, they keep getting back to Lowry. And, oh, Lowry mm-hmm. needs, like you say, like the Wendell Carter can play alongside Markkanen. Markkanen needs to be set up. He was more than what we thought he would be. All that can be true. I still don't think he's on the cusp of greatness. We're not talking about an all-NBA level player here. We're talking about, you know, what Paxson called a foundational piece. I mean, some of this to me is starting to really border on unfair, as we're getting an expectations creep for a guy we should probably just be really pleased is really good.
Right. I mean, and we saw that a little bit come out in the LaVine deal, right? Because it's like, we should be talking about LaVine
right.
as the guy, just strictly off of, strictly financially, but we're talking about Lowry is the guy. And I mean, he's still on his rookie contract, and he has plenty of time to kind of find himself, find his game. And it's just the only thing we should be saying 100% right now is that clearly he is a foundational piece. Past that, it's sort of like, okay, time's going to tell. And I think you might be right that there's a little bit of a high sort of expectation placed in him. But I think part of that comes from the way he came to Chicago, right? So if you're getting rid of Jimmy Butler, you have to put some sort of emphasis on the person that you got, because you need to be able to justify doing that.
So to that end then, with Zach LaVine, do you get any sense that maybe, just maybe, the Bulls got lucky that it was only the Kings involved in the bidding there, that it was only what it ended up being? I mean, do you get the sense that, I mean, if somebody else had come in with a max deal, a Devin Booker type thing, were they matching regardless in order to, like you said, justify what was done with Jimmy Butler?
You know, I think justifying what was done with Jimmy Butler was a large piece of why that happened, and I don't think that's necessarily a good reason to bring someone back. That being said, I think, and maybe this is placing too much trust in the organization, but I'm going to say no. I think that this was I don't know that they were necessarily bringing him back no matter what, and if someone came in with a higher deal, they would have done the same thing. I think that 80 million, 78 million is still a ton of money. And I think that was probably slightly more than they were anticipating to begin with. But that's, you know, that's a guessing game at this point.
So how's the Bulls beat been treating you as you're getting up to speed?
So far, so good. I can't complain. I'm going to be honest. I'm ready to get out of the Vegas heat, but I've enjoyed Chicago a lot, and I mean, it's been really great.
You get to work with Casey Johnson, who's one of the nicest people anywhere in our business. and anytime you want to punch Joe Cowley in the mouth, you can, you know, feel free to do so on our behalf. Tell him it's from us. He'll understand completely.
So as long as I say it's delivered from you, then I get a pass.
Oh yeah, no, he'll get it. He'll say, okay, that's cool. That's cool. I got it. All right, fine. All right, Malika. Here's to getting back out of the desert soon. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you so much.
That is Malika Andrews of the Chicago Tribune covering the Bulls and their summer league. I don't want to take too much out of summer league basketball. It is very easy because of the way it's covered. It looks like NBA basketball. You see it
for a moment.
Ooh, NBA ball. You see, and then you actually watch what's happening when the ball is moving around, and you go, oh, that's not NBA basketball.
I was watching the other night, Saturday night, I think it was, and I noticed that in the summer league, it's the on the back of the jersey, the number is on the top, and then the name of the player is on the bottom.
It's old Sacramento Kings. Yeah, it's like Reggie Theus Kings.
And
yeah.
I thought, you know, a little bit of a flashback, a little bit of, you know, that's kind of cool or whatever, but it's also really indicative of summer league ball, right? Like, the name is on the bottom of the jersey. It's
not as important.
You're not watching.
Did you see Jaren Jackson get his soul taken from him yesterday?
No.
I saw the
camera angle was perfect. It's from the opposite baseline under the basket. He gets the ball, starts driving against the Magic, and all of a sudden, Bamba and Jonathan Isaac both collapse on him.
Big men.
The ball goes very far back the other way.
Ooh.
It was pretty fantastic.
There are some moments. It's great for highlights. There's always...
Oh, of course it is.
Carter's two-handed, like, take it off the back.
Oh, beautiful.
Absolutely gorgeous. Beautiful. That was perfect. And they're trying some different camera angles, which I like, the moving camera. So they showed the coach of Atlanta, and I'm watching. I know that guy. How do I know that guy?
I know him.
It's Chris Gent.
Really?
The former Ohio State player. The last time I saw Chris Gent, he was playing for the Columbus Horizon in the Continental Basketball Association, and he had this huge head of blonde hair, like Beavis. Like he had.
Was going to say like mullet?
The guy had great hair, and then I the face is familiar, and now it's like completely bald, which got very, very strange.
I have just watched the Jaren Jackson video.
Oh, really? Was it worse than the mantis shrimp?
It's rough.
Okay. Is he ever going to recover?
Yeah, I think he'll be fine eventually, but that you're right. I mean, the soul was removed from his body for a brief moment. Right. It returned,
I'll have
however.
To check that out. We, in the next hour, are going to be giving away a pair of passes to meet Joe Maddon following our July 24th live broadcast here from the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Stage.
What's listening. Up, man?
If you
No, that's not Joe.
No, that's not Joe. I've got an interesting weekend for a veteran MLB player who he's always fun to talk about because he's so odd. He's had a very oddly shaped career. He just finds himself in the middle of some things. It's sort of a Forrest Gump type weekend here for this guy. Also, we've got a bit of an agricultural emergency.
An agricultural emergency.
Yes. We have two.
We're going to solve it here on the show.
We may. We have way, way, way too much of something in this country, and we're going to have to figure out what to do with it.
I bet the solution from you is going to be bugs. It almost always is. I've got the greatest summertime television this side of Game of Thrones for you.
All right.
It is delicious.
Okay, that's coming up. The Midday Midway. We'll hit it next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.